Hello again, Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. This is the show taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the nonprofit publication that brings you arts, community, and culture in one place. This is your host, Mark Fleischer. This is a special editor's note on this episode, in which we discuss the fate of the Highland Heights United Methodist Church on Summer Avenue at Highland. We talk a lot about a proposed gas station here and possible demolition of the church. However, there have been a few developments since we recorded the show, which was recorded on Thursday, August 13th. On that same day, an article appeared in the Commercial Appeal about the property and the new ownership's plans. J. Max Hamadi of Sperry Commercial Global Affiliates was quoted as saying that plans for the property are in their early stages and, quote, "We are not that heartless to go ahead and demolish a century-old building just because we want to put a gas station in there," end quote. In addition, on Tuesday, August 18th, the Memphis City Council passed a resolution requesting a 100-day moratorium on the issuance of demolition permits of churches over 50 years old and for the Office of Planning and Development to provide a report on possible alternative uses and possible zoning amendments for such properties. To talk about this development, to talk about the church and the history of the church and also the neighborhood, is Dane Forlines and Fred Morton. Dane is with the Heights CDC as a special projects director. He's also a resident of the Heights. And Fred Morton, who is a retired clergyman, he was formerly with the staff of the Christ Methodist Church. He is a longtime resident of the Heights. And as Dane was telling me before the show started, Fred is hardly retired. He's quite active in the Heights community. So Dane and Fred, welcome to the show. Welcome to Storyboard 30.
Good to be here.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Yeah.
Fred, I thought we'd start with you. I would like to get a sense of how we got here. In other words, you know, a lot of folks in Memphis, of course, know of the Highland Heights United Methodist Church there on the corner of Summer and Highland. What they may not know is that it has been sold, obviously. And it has been sold to a couple of brothers who are developers who, as we know now, have some tentative plans to demolish the church and, you know, partially build a gas station. So I'd like to start us out by talking about kind of how we got here.
Well, yeah, I'm glad to do that. Although the last two serving pastors there, Rich Cook and Emily Matheny, are probably the best persons really to speak to that situation since they served there as the sitting pastors for the last 15 years or so. But I've been on the periphery. I've been in retirement in the last 10 years. I returned to the neighborhood. I don't actually live here, but I live in Bartlett. But I came back to see this as an avenue for doing volunteer service in my retirement and identify with the community. I was head of the community organization there, the Corners of Highland Heights Community of Shalom, for about 8 years. So I served a lot of time there. But what happened was that Highland Heights United Methodist Church was founded in 1903, I believe. So it's celebrated its centennial several years back and has been there. Well, like a lot of churches, suburban churches, and particularly in East Memphis, it experienced rapid growth following World War II with the baby boomer and all that sort of thing. And the new church plant was built in 1950 to 1956 or so. That's the red brick structure. That's when those were built. And it had a flourishing membership in the 1950s and 60s, on up to the mid-1970s. And that's when things sort of began to taper off and began to go into decline, with a transition in the neighborhood, with a lot of the developments in the wider community, with busing and a lot of other things that brought on a lot of immense change. So that we got to that point where that, in say in 1990, the situation in that church and in that community had taken a dramatic turn in terms of its basic demographics. And the church experienced a lot of, you know, real stress in terms of maintaining that facility, maintaining a program to sustain itself, and adapting to the changing complexion of the community with minorities that were moving in. And so that's the situation that developed, like in many other neighborhoods, somewhat similar to Highland Heights. And that brought us up to, you know, around the year 2000 or so, where it was really a struggle to maintain that facility and to make it viable. And a lot of heroic efforts were made on the part of the dwindling congregation that remained there. And they did a I think, a wonderful job the last 10 or 15 years in reaching out to the community and making it viable, but they did not have the capacity to recruit the kind of membership and the kind of funding that would sustain that congregation. And so the congregation had to close, and it closed in 2019. And in those closing months, the year or so, the membership, they made an effort to try to transition the property in the hands of persons that would deal with it in a loving way. But they were not able to do that until the church actually closed in June of 2019. And so the disposition of the property was really turned over to the judicatory, the Memphis Annual Conference of the United Methodist Church, the regional organization. And they're the ones that actually oversaw the disposition of the property. And so that's what happened to it. In contrast to our sister church, just right down up the street on the Grimes United Methodist Church, they closed about a year and a half earlier, but they closed, sort of under their own steam, by their own. And they were, the local congregation was in charge of the disposition of that property. Well, that did not happen with Highland Heights Church. When Highland Heights Church closed, the membership, it closed, it disbanded and turned over the disposition of the property to the judicatory. So that's why things have sort of turned out the way that they have, which is sad and regrettable, but that's where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Dane, you've been following this and on top of it as a resident. You'd mentioned that you live pretty close to the church. And also last year, you took Chooch Pickard, which is one of our Storyboard's go-to friends as far as our architectural history and all that goes, and one of our colleagues, and took a tour of the church. Let's talk about for a second, just overall, the kind of condition the church is in.
Well, in addition to Chooch going through it, we also have had civil engineers go through it, professional real estate brokers, and the general consensus is that the structures are in really great shape. There are obviously, with any building of that age, there are obviously repairs that need to be done, updating that needs to be done. But what we're hearing is that the bones of the building are still in great shape. And if you just go by and look from the outside, you look at it, it's still a beautiful building.
It's gorgeous, and the campus itself is gorgeous. In addition, it's not just the church itself, it's the entire campus. It's really, really beautiful. It just seems to me like a developer with any kind of creativity could look at that property and just turn it into all kinds of things. We've talked about this, privately, just talking about the possibilities for that property, given even the demographic of the area. A community center with some kind of a market, a fresh market, a grocery, I'm not talking about a fresh market grocery store, but I'm talking about, for example, like a farmer's market type thing. It just seems like it opens it up to all kinds of possibilities.
That's right. And pretty much when the building went up for sale, pretty much anybody with a heartbeat, I tried to get in there and look through it. And So we had a number of people that toured the building, some people that have previously adaptively reused buildings similar to that, churches, and turned them into a more modern day use. We started to hear a common theme with what it could be used for. There's the original sanctuary building, and then about 6 years later, there was an educational wing built. And they're both built in the Gothic style. They both match each other really well. But what we've heard that makes a lot of sense is something like what you're suggesting, creative retail for the sanctuary. We have heard something, some people mention about some maybe condo development or something in the sanctuary, but creative retail seems to come up again and again. And then the educational building lends itself to a multifamily conversion or an office or some mix of the two.
Yeah, I mean, here in Memphis, and especially now, we're still really in a housing shortage, right? And it seems like, to your point about condos, repurposing the rest of the campus for some, you know, either low or moderate income housing seems like, you know, an easy transition and something that would fill a neighborhood need right away.
Yeah, that's right. And it's in a great location for that. It's pretty much equidistant to University of Memphis and Rhodes College. So that's drawn the attention of people and thinking about multifamily conversion, that students might be attracted to it, or young professionals. So we've had an architect look over the floor plans, which with Fred's help, we were able to find the original pencil drawn sketches, architectural renderings of the building that are just beautiful in and of themselves. But in looking at the floor plates and the structure itself, there's just a lot of flexibility with what can happen with the existing structures, a lot of potential.
Yeah. The Heights CDC and the Heights neighborhood, Dane, you've encountered a lot of challenges in the neighborhood. Just let's remind folks, you know, kind of the overall demographic. Fred, you mentioned the demographics of the neighborhood as well, but Dane, talk again about the demographics of the neighborhood and some of the other challenges you face, because, you know, we've talked about the corner of National in summer, which there was a structure that was demolished last year that removed some of the historical streetscape of the area. You all have the Heights line in development, right? Talk about some of those overall challenges that you face in the Heights.
The population, yes, has been on the decline for a couple of decades, and there are challenges with jobs and income and things like that, but there's a lot of pride in the community, and our area, our service area for the Heights CDC is about 2 square miles. It makes up less than 1% of the land area of the city of Memphis, but we have in our service area almost 10% of the city's vacant and blighted properties. So when we started a resident engagement process 7 or 8 years ago and asked neighbors what they were most concerned about, the vacancy and blight was a common theme. And so our organization has tried different strategies to address that. And the blight in our neighborhood, being as prevalent as it is, there just aren't the opportunities for residents to experience beauty as much as in some other places. And the structure that we're talking about today is just absolutely beautiful. And seeing that building and the archway, the stained glass, the bell tower, all of those elements, it can just transport the body into another frame of mind. And that aesthetic and imagery is significant, and it provides people in our area an opportunity to encounter beauty.
Just one comment. When I was in Europe, I think one of the things that I came away with was that sort of that template of what a traditional Christian cathedral complex is. You have a cathedral, you have then a cloistered a complex attached to it. And so while architecturally that building is, you know, 70 years old, it fits the template of the ancient style of the cathedral complex, where you've got a cathedral, a cloister, and a bell tower. So there's something, you know, historically familiar about that whole design, not to mention it's just beautiful. And those stained glass windows are some of the most beautiful that I've seen in the world. They're remarkably beautiful. And then there's also some interior paintings of a local artist in that church, in the foyer that are also beautiful. I mean, they're not world class, but they are tastefully done and they are inspiring. So there's a lot that's still there that is of great worth and value.
You are listening to host Mark Fleischer. This is Storyboard 30. We are talking with Fred Morton and Dane Fourlines about the fate of the historic Highland Heights United Methodist Church on Summer Avenue at Highland. Some folks listening might think, how is it that a property like that is not protected historically? And, you know, listeners of the show and also readers of Storyboard and those, you know, interested in historic preservation, you know, may be aware that, you know, a lot of our historic structures, we see them as historic. They're historic to Memphis, but they're not on the National Register of Historic Places, one. And then two, you know, a lot of our areas still do not have historic zoning protections, right? So this is one of those examples where that corner, Summer and Highland, does not have any historic zoning protections. What that means is if I'm a developer and I buy the property, you know, there's not a whole lot really stopping me from pulling a permit to demolish, right? Which is unfortunate.
I want to zoom that conversation out a little bit. We just completed the comprehensive planning process for the city of Memphis, Memphis 3.0, and there were 15,000 residents across the city that participated in that process and shared their vision for their where they wanted to see Memphis go. And not only from a historic preservation standpoint, but just a land use and zoning standpoint in general, that a lot of our land use and zoning is antiquated. It's left over from decades in the past, and it doesn't really lead to where we as a city say we want to go. So the conversation around how do we save buildings, I think, needs to be broadened to talk about how do we develop policy and land use and all of these regulations that are going to lead to the city that we say we want to be. They're here. Those policies are in place. There are standards that are on the books, and they are shaping our city. Let's make sure that they're shaping our city in the way that we want to see them go. Now, as it relates to historic preservation specifically, I'm not an expert in that. However, it's my understanding that a property on the National Register, for example, is not protected from a regulatory standpoint. So there's nothing that necessarily legally restricts a developer from demolishing a property on the National Register. Locally, there are overlays and conservation districts, historic districts, that can protect historic properties, but getting those passed is a pretty heavy lift. It's expensive. It's a lot of shoe leather, and not to say that it's not worth it, but it is a long, drawn-out process. And when a situation like this comes up with Highland Heights United Methodist Church, there's not time to mobilize those types of resources. And then there are also limitations for what you can do to change what is currently in place on a property. So there's a lot of opportunity at a very fundamental level to change our laws and regulations to direct us and to naturally produce the kind of development that we have said we want to see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the 3.0 process clearly, and the public engagement clearly laid that out for us.
And the Highland Heights United Methodist Church, incidentally, is in a Memphis 3.0 accelerated anchor district. So it adds even more significance to what happens there.
I've been looking at this and some of the other developments going up around town because there's some other gas stations proposed for some other areas. And again, I'm just going to completely take off any objectivity for a minute and just say we don't need any more gas stations.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a common sentiment, and I hold to it as well, that an individual has a certain right to develop their property the way that they want to. And so I agree with that to a certain extent, but we've had various controls on the development of land for over 100 years in this country. There's There's land use, there are subdivision regulations, there's zoning, there are setback and bulk regulation requirements, on and on and on, that direct the way that a person can develop their land. And the intention behind these, the reason that these exist, is because we realize that as a person develops their own property, that has an impact on the community around them. That, you know, we don't desire to have a pig slaughterhouse in a residential area, for example. So there are definitely regulations that we've put in place to try to, allow an individual to have some right for their property, but also recognize the broader community impact. And as you've pointed out, the construction of a new gas station is not providing the community with a service that it currently lacks. Mm-hmm. And so, however, as we mentioned before, the historic architecture, the beauty that's there, and then the potential for the existing buildings to be used in a profitable way and to drive future economic development in the whole area, I think is something that needs attention. When you think about areas in the city of Memphis, urbanized areas that have revitalized over the past 20 years, you're hard pressed to identify an area that hasn't involved some seminal historic preservation project. I think of Overton Square, I think of Crosstown, I think of South Main, that these have always evolved around historic preservation. And so seeing these historic buildings and this grand architecture as a competitive advantage that the city has, to allow that to disappear and erode is causing, you know, ripple effects throughout the whole community.
Yeah. If I can jump in. It's the scout passe thing. I haven't heard anybody say it in a long time, but I remember a writer back in the 50s talking about private wealth and public poverty. And the notion is that while in America we have accumulated vast wealth in the private and the corporate sector, that when we look at the public sector, so very often in terms of public facilities and places like that, it's a status of a real impoverishment. And that certainly would be the case with the loss of such, you know, a facility like this. Of course, I've got some personal regrets because it's my church that sort of let it go, but that's another story. But the fact remains that this is a wonderful asset to the wider community. The architectural enhancement, the beauty that it renders. I mean, in Western Europe, I mean, very often where the churches are closed, the state has gone in and acquired those buildings because they are so precious, they are so beautiful, and so they're maintained by the state. The church has abandoned those facilities, but the church has picked them up. I'm not suggesting that here, but the fact is that this is a wonderful facility. It's a wonderful, it makes a real statement, like Dane said, of beauty in the midst of a lot of less than attractive, architecture that surrounds the place. And we could do worse than to have a facility like this in our community.
Yeah. I'm going to repeat what you said. I've never heard that phrase before, but I think it is really worth revisiting. Private wealth versus public poverty, right?
Yeah, John Galbraith is the economist that I think coined that.
I'm going to definitely look that up, because that's something worth exploring, because that's exactly what I'm seeing here. Fred, also, I'd like to talk about, too, I really want to hear the story about finding the original plans for the church, and also just your take on growing up in the neighborhood and all that. But first, tell me about how you acquired the plans, the original plans for the church.
I just happened to have a key when the property was in process of being changed, and I got access to the to the building when the transfer of the ownership was going from the congregation to the denomination, and I was able to direct Dane and the others to those documents that were hidden away in a safe in the church when they were, you know, unloading all those things, and got them in the hand of the real estate agent so he could make them available. And Dane, you know, had those plans copied and everything, make them available, but just at the right place, at the right time.
Yeah. On a personal level, and again, growing up in the neighborhood, what does the church mean to you?
Oh, well, it was everything. I mean, like so many of us, you know, so many folks growing up in the South, the church is your second home. I lived on Summer Avenue growing up, and then we moved a few blocks further out, north of that. But that was home. I grew up there. I was in Scouts there. I got married there. I had my first child baptized there. So that was a home to me. And that was a case of the eight or 10 churches throughout the Highland Heights community. The churches were, you know, indispensable to our growth and to our social development, moral and spiritual development. They were indispensable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you grew up in the neighborhood, as we mentioned. Yeah. You've been quite active though the last 10 years in the neighborhood.
We had a community development group that was sort of paralleled with the Greater Heights coming along. Well, we didn't survive, but the Greater Heights did. But they're carrying on the work in fine fashion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, going back to that quote, private wealth versus public poverty, and also, Dane, your comment about blight. Historically, you know, corners with numerous gas stations, especially really in the middle of a neighborhood, it only leads to a continuation of blight, doesn't it?
I guess beauty is in the eye of the beholder, maybe. But in an area of the city that is inundated with gas stations, and they all seem to conform to the same basic architecture. And I think the general sentiment would be that that architectural form is not necessarily the most uplifting, you know, to the human spirit. So the more of the same is going to produce more of the same. And, you know, I'd say in terms of the economic value and the return on investment of gas stations, we're dealing with a situation here with this property that is a gas station developer was looking at this property and bought it. This was not a general developer that was looking for the highest and best use of the property. And right. So as we've talked to architects, engineers, real estate professionals, developers, and others, there seems to be a lot of value in the adaptive reuse of the existing structures. And when I say value, I'm not just talking about community value. I'm talking about economic value, that the highest and best economic use of the property is probably not a gas station. When we look around our city and we see where revitalization has happened, it has not happened as we've developed more convenience stores and gas stations.
Yeah, right. Now, just playing devil's advocate for just a second, I've read that the development team is interested in more than just a gas station, but they're also interested in developing, I guess, some sort of mixed use there at the same time. But I want to ask also, because I had a big question mark here that I want to make sure I address, is, you know, in the work you've done so far, and I say with the Heights CDC, Jared Myers, Christina Crutchfield, you all have been working to raise awareness about the church itself, raise awareness about the possibility of it being demolished. Is it too late to save it?
There has been a whole lot of support that we've been offered since going public with our attempts to try to save the building. For example, a petition that we've circulated around gathered about 3,000 signatures in under a week. So you compare that with some of the other efforts to save buildings around Memphis, that is a whole lot of support really, really fast. And it goes to show the city and our neighborhood that people care about what happens at that corner. They care about what happens in the community, and they care about what happens to the Highland Heights United Methodist Church building. So I think that just the broad community support that we've seen carries a whole lot of weight. And when you're in the development business and you depend on public support in order to be profitable, I think that's something that you need to pay attention to. Is this something that is going to be seen as a positive in the community, or is it going to be seen as a negative? And so it's definitely an uphill battle to climb trying to save a building, you know, in our economy and political structure, but we see a groundswell of support for it, and that support grows every day. And we've attempted on several occasions to reach out to the new owners and try to work together to find a mutually beneficial plan for moving forward. We've not gotten a whole lot of cooperation to date, but we're hopeful that we can continue those conversations and work together to think about not only appealing to, you know, the preservation sentiment, although I think that's important, but also thinking about what is the highest and best use of that property, what will receive the highest rate of return, what makes the most sense. And so we're definitely at the table wanting to have those conversations. And we've had offers from, other professional developers, professional architects that are willing to offer their services to come up with a plan, the best plan for moving forward as it relates to the redevelopment of the property.
Mm-hmm. From the Heights perspective, what do you have in place to help solicit support from the community?
Yeah, we've started a petition through change.org. So anybody can go online to change.org and search for Highland Heights Methodist Church. It'll take you to the petition. You can sign that. We have almost 3,300 signatures to date in less than a week. If you're really interested in being on board, you can also contact our organization at info@heightcdc.org.
Is there any sense of how urgently we need to, as a community, how urgently the community needs to act to step in? How imminent are the developers' plans? Do we know those things?
Well, we know what they've said publicly, that we've read in the media. And so we're hearing that they're still in design stages, and it may be up to 2 years before anything happens there, but there's no guarantee and anything could happen. And so we think that the time to act is now. There's a lot of momentum around interest in saving the building. And so we think the time to act is here right now, and maybe even to some extent yesterday, but we can't change the past. So let's look forward to the future and do whatever we can to offer our assistance in working with the current owners to develop the property in a way that is good for them and also good for the community.
Fred, I'm going to give you one of the last words. You've mentioned what the church means to you personally. What would you say to listeners out there who are thinking about or listening to this and thinking about ways that they can support the community and ways they could hopefully convince a developer to not tear down the church?
One who's a lover of architecture, and I was in Europe 8 years ago, and I was just enthralled with the architecture of the medieval Gothic structures and things like that. And so I love architecture, but basically I'm a Christian minister, and to me, the church is not a building, it's people. And I'm profoundly concerned about, you know, what happens to the people in that community, the people that have been left there behind as our denomination has sort of abandoned that neighborhood And so that's where that's what hurts my heart most are the people that are still there. And what I'm spending my efforts is trying to do things to salvage and to redeem the efforts to bring ministry, to bring, you know, real ministry back to that neighborhood and to minister to the people that are there. So that's my great heart's desire at this particular point, despite how sad I am to see the building go. But my heart is with the people that are still there.
Of course, that makes perfect sense. Yes. And having, in the best case scenario, having the church retained at least gives, provides a sense of community and a community center for the community, even if the mm-hmm. actual denomination of the church is not there. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Memphians, residents, listeners, if you're interested, definitely go to change.org and search Highland Heights Methodist Church, and you'll find a petition there that you can sign if you're so interested. Dane Forlines, Fred Morton, thank you so much for joining me on Storyboard 30 today. This is, I think this is a very important conversation to have. We, as a city, we do have historic treasures and churches and communities all over the city. We should definitely be as proactive as we can. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Mark.
Yeah, thank you, Mark.
You have been listening to Storyboard 30, and this is a special editor's note on this episode in which we discussed the fate of the Highland Heights United Methodist Church on Summer Avenue at Highland. We did talk a lot about a proposed gas station here and possible demolition of the church. However, we should note once again, there have been a few developments since we recorded the show, which was recorded on Thursday, August 13th. On that same day, an article appeared in the Commercial Appeal about the property and the new ownership's plans. J. Max Hamadi of Sperry Commercial Global Affiliates was quoted as saying that the plans for the property are in their early stages, and quote, "We are not that heartless to go ahead and demolish a century-old building just because we want to put a gas station in there," end quote. In addition, on Tuesday, August 18th, the Memphis City Council passed a resolution requesting a 100-day moratorium on the issuance of demolition permits of churches over 50 years old and for the Office of Planning and Development to provide a report on possible alternative uses and possible zoning amendments for such property. Please visit storyboardmemphis.org for any updates on this story or on the property. And once again, thank you for listening to Storyboard 30. This has been your host, Mark Fleischer. Thanks, as always, to producer Vance Durbin and to WYPL broadcast manager Tommy Warren, to WYPL and the Memphis Public Libraries for their support, and to you listeners and supporters of the library and FM 89.3. We hope you join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with those Memphis personalities and shapers who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week, and please stay safe out there.